It's not enough to just like a story or say angry about a story. You should do something about that story. And our platform is really about that do something.
Hello, this is the Great Battlefield Podcast. I'm Nathaniel G. Perlman. A great political battle is being fought right now between progressives and the forces of reaction on the other side. This show is about the political entrepreneurs and other progressive leaders who are finding new or improved ways to fight. Bart Myers is the CEO and founder of Countable and Countable Action. He moved from an extensive career in technology and business into the world of political technology entrepreneurship with Countable. And Countable is two things. One, a free and open community platform for communication and action about politics. And two, a version that can be customized for a particular client to help build their own community. That version is in use as a digital action hub by a variety of clients, including the Environmental Defense Fund, Alyssa Milano, Chelsea Handler, and Aaron Brockovich. Bart and I had a very good conversation about Countable and its history and direction. His is a compelling story in the intersection of technology and politics. So, after a word from our sponsor, my interview with Bart Myers and Countable.
This episode is brought to you by Graphicacy. Graphicacy is an analytic design firm that can help you advance the mission of your organization using your own real data and information. They are 21st century visual communicators who create interactive graphics, motion graphics, and data visualizations. You can find Graphicacy at graphicacy.com. That is GRAPHICACY.com. With Graphicacy's help, you can visualize a better world.
Hi, Bart.
Hello. How's it going?
Going good. Would you mind introducing yourself and giving me a quick biography?
Sure. I'm Bart Myers. I'm the founder and CEO of Countable and Countable Action. Pretty much Bay Area native. Got my degree in liberal arts and then got into tech. And I've been in tech pretty much my whole career. Prior to Countable, I started a company called SideReel, which was in a very different space. We helped make it really easy to watch TV shows online. And SideReel was later acquired by TiVo.
What's the sort of founding story for Countable?
It's a combination of sort of personal and professional interests. I've always, kind of my whole life going back to school, really cared, you know, about politics and democracy. And I studied international studies, and there's a fragility to a system of democracy that we take for granted, given that we've been at it now for over 200 years. And that fragility, I think, is more meaningful today than ever. And we're seeing it under attack around the world. And I just have a really kind of deep sense of history and the risks that really are posed to us, and the risks of tyranny and autocracy and kind of a one side dominating the other side, and in the process sort of killing off the institutions that really help democracy to thrive, like freedom of the press and people having a voice and freedom of speech. I mean, there's just such profound wisdom in the Constitution and in the Bill of Rights. And I believe in that. And when I had an opportunity to start a company that could help to ensure those efforts and our sort of legacy continue for my children and their children ongoing, I jumped at the chance. And from the beginning, we had a massive vision for what Countable would become. But it's starting anything like this, particularly in this space, really takes time and effort. And so we've now been at it for about 5 years, and we've built really an extraordinary variety of technologies that really are about giving people more of a voice and helping them to communicate with their lawmakers, helping them to understand the issues that are affecting them, helping them to organize around those issues and make a difference. And that, I think, is really kind of core to the underpinnings of democracy in the country. And I feel very proud of what our team has done and what our users do and how our customers are using our platform every day.
You mentioned having kind of a massive vision. What was that vision?
The vision really, I mean, I think most succinctly put is to save democracy. Today, when you think about Washington, you think about our lawmakers, and you think about how digital tools have enabled and brought access to so many different aspects of our lives, not government and not governing. And in fact, there are many barriers that have been put up that shouldn't be there, that have made digital access to our lawmakers, to our politicians, to the issues we're facing, very difficult. And we absolutely have to solve that. Our society is simply too big. The problems that we're facing now are way too massive for us to just kind of blindly trust that our lawmakers, who spend the vast majority of their time fundraising to get reelected, and not actually understanding the issues and legislating on the issues and working together to solve the issues, or even thinking long term about the issues, that they're going to do it themselves. They're not. The system is broken and it needs to be solved. And the only way it's going to be solved is if we make it, we fix it fundamentally.
Well, you said you've built some extraordinary tech to make this connection. What sort of things does it enable?
So there are two sides to Countable. There's the Countable consumer experience. If you download the Countable app, if you go to the Countable site, that's one side. And then our platform, the technology that powers it, also powers many causes, campaigns, and communities and movements, which is our business. Our business is really licensing our core technology. And in both cases, what we're trying to do is really sort of marry three things that have largely been kept separate. Community, audience, us coming together as people, either behind a cause, behind a candidate, behind a lawmaker, behind an issue. And then when we come together, what is it that pulls us together? And there's two things that we do to pull people together. One is that we have a very robust platform for keeping people engaged and informed. And so we use news, we use updates. In the case of Congress, we'll tell you when your lawmakers vote. We'll give you updates on what they voted on, short, succinct summaries to understand issues. All of this is built in a mobile-first way. So, you know, we're all on our phones all the time now. We're living on our phones. So if we're going to be living on our phones all the time, let's make the information that we need compatible with that and friendly to that. And that's just a recognition of how we're all changing in our day-to-day life. And so making things kind of bite-sized, you can understand an issue. And then this is the key, that you can take some kind of action from it. Too often, we're reading an article about global warming and we get angry and this is horrible. And there's nothing in the article that we can do about it. We have to then go elsewhere to go find out what we can do about it. Why not bring the do about it into that content experience? And so action and content should be married together. And we believe this is really sort of the future and ultimately the saving grace for the media industry generally, is the idea that media can become a catalyst for action and community and engagement. And once it starts to do that, then you're going to start to see lots of interesting things happen. You can start to see people engaging with the media directly as opposed to on Facebook. It's not enough to just like a story or say angry about a story. You should do something about that story. And our platform is really about that do something.
So you mentioned sort of three different things that you're marrying. And I wasn't clear from your description there what those three were. Was it community, content, action, or what are the three?
Those are them. Community, a group of people with a shared binding interest. Content, which is the glue that keeps you engaged and keeps you coming back. So content can be news. Content can be updates from the community, from the cause. Content can be legislative alerts. And then action, which is signing a petition, going to an event, donating, rallying, expressing your opinion, telling your story, pulling people together. There's a myriad of actions. Action alone should never just be donate. It should never just be share this to social media. There's a continuum of action, which could be as simple as express your opinion, could be as simple as contact your representative. There are free actions out there that are incredible value. And organizations and causes and so forth need to become much savvier about engaging their communities and keeping their communities engaged by using those two glues, content and action. And that's what we do.
So there have been numerous attempts to do some things that sound a lot like this to me. Going back to early days of the internet, a lot came up around 2000 and kind of have shown up and in many cases faded away, even with large investments. Tell me a little bit about how your platform differs from efforts that haven't made it, and how is it growing, and what does the community look like now?
Oh, yeah. No, totally. I mean, look, you can be incredibly well-funded. As you've noted, there are many, many examples of that. But if the technology is not there, the audience isn't there, the timing isn't there, it fails. I mean, I think Friendster, which had many of the same features as Facebook and came before Facebook but just didn't take off, or Tribe, there are many of these sort of proto-Facebooks, even MySpace, didn't have the right formula that came together at that right moment to sort of hit the zeitgeist. Do we have that formula? Yeah, I think we do, but it's different. There are a couple of things that really make this moment special. A big part of it is the tipping point in mobile. The fact that probably a vast majority of the people listening to this podcast right now are doing so on their phones. Unfortunately, the vast majority of causes, the vast majority of campaigns don't get that. They think only about desktop users, people on the web, and thus they create experiences that just suck on your phone. And as a result, they don't work well. So we've solved that. But in solving that, we've created a much more fruitful feedback loop where people who are engaging with this content and action on their phones can do so on the move, on the subway, at lunch, and still feel like they're participating and feel like they're engaging with this issue in a key way. So that's one piece. Another piece is that, candidly, there's a backlash forming against Facebook and platforms like Facebook, which are now showing their true colors, which this is a capitalist endeavor, and their true colors are about growing their platform. Their true colors are not necessarily about growing or making a difference around your cause or issue. That's our mission. That's not theirs. And as a result, Facebook disincentivizes people leaving Facebook to go and take action on an issue or a cause or something of that nature. And that's one of the big reasons why we've really tried to build Countable as a platform. And in so doing, we can give to any nonprofit, GLAAD, the Environmental Defense Fund, two of our customers, Chelsea Handler is using our platform, Aaron Brockovich, their own digital action hub. So this is like the next generation of a website. This is the next generation of your mobile experience as well. We're really trying to get people to think beyond, I have an email list, I have a website, I have a Facebook page. This is your community. This is really the root core of your movement. And if you want to make a difference, if you really want to make actively push your mission, you need to have a platform that can really bind those people together in a community where they can help support each other, support you, take action, stay informed and engaged. And that's 100% of what we're about. So all of that is to say that this moment and our formula are very well timed. And thus, I think there's a piece of luck to it. I mean, candidly, because we didn't get a $50 million check from a billionaire in starting this, because we bootstrapped it, we have had to build this and figure out what works in a very lean way, in a very experimental way, that I think that if we'd gotten that big check, we, you know, sort of the hubris that comes with that would have really sort of taken us down the path of, we have all the answers, we're going to build the ultimate solution, and not have been as kind of test-driven and not have been as experimental. And instead, what we've done is we've really looked at what do people want? How do they want to engage? And there are already natural patterns here where there are blockages. When you read an article about something that's happening and your blood starts to boil, but there's nothing for you to do about it, why is that? Why is there no action tied to our media and our stories? Why? What unwritten rule of journalism says you can't give people a way to engage or organizations to talk to when we're all hungry for that? We all want that. And that's a recognition, we think, of untapped potential and energy, which our platform is really focused on fulfilling.
There are certainly stories which would impel people to action quite naturally. Sometimes those actions might be highly opposed to each other, depending on who is reading the article. Like you read an article about abortion, and one side wants to contribute to Planned Parenthood, and the other side wants to contribute to whatever's on the other side. How do you handle the intersection of ideology and partisanship and things like that?
So we handle it distinctly differently from our customers can handle it. And our platform is really built to offer options. Action and association with a story can start with a simple question. Do you agree or disagree with this? Are you in support of finding solutions to global warming, or are you against it? And putting up that question along with a agree, disagree, a yay, nay, a smiley face, sad face, what we refer to as reactions. Those reactions are very powerful. They do a variety of things. First of all, when I say I'm in favor of finding a solution to global warming or climate restoration, let's say, and I click yes and support there, that one action has now informed Countable or our customer a little bit more about you, about what you care about. And we can respond to that in a lot of ways. We can respond to that by saying, awesome, here are some organizations you can support. You should be aware of the Environmental Defense Fund. Click here to support them and get updates from them. Join them, donate to them. The pathways can sort of fall out from there. Now, within Countable and the Countable experience, Countable is a nonpartisan news and action source. So the questions themselves are really kind of open-ended, are really kind of focused on you express your opinion, you take action as you choose to. Many of our customers, however, have a particular goal in mind. They're working on a particular solution to a problem. And in those cases, it may not be appropriate for them to pose a yay-nay question. They may simply pose a go support the Environmental Defense Fund right now. And if you're not into that, if you're not about that, you will not take that action. And that's fine. And so again, there's flexibility built into the platform that's really designed to support a broad variety of actions and a broad variety of views around these issues. But really, the ultimate answer to that does differ depending on if you're talking about kind of a media story or if you're talking about more of a nonprofit advocacy kind of story. And there you're really trying to bring together people of sort of one view or similar view in agreement with what you're working on. In those cases, the actions that associate with the content really should be contextual, appropriate, driving that particular mission and leading people up sort of a ladder of engagement from a light form action like, I support this cause, I believe in this issue, I want to share the news, to I want to tell my story, to I want to donate, I want to build a movement, I want to host a house party, that sort of continuum of action. And so happy to talk about either side, sort of the media use case versus the kind of cause or politician use case. I think they're different, but our platform really does fundamentally support both, as they are just communities of different sorts trying to accomplish different things.
Why did you call it Countable?
Naming anything, as you have clearly named the Great Battlefield, is really hard. And naming something that is memorable, meaningful, that is available, where you can get the domain name and you can get all of those assets, and it's not already sort of taken up by anybody, is really hard. And I love the definition of Countable. I love the idea that as we think about democracy and being in a republic and representative republic, democracy, forms of democracy, you know, even in a liquid democracy model, which we can certainly talk about, even in a liquid democracy model, in the end, there needs to be representatives of groups of people. And you need to be able to count the views of those people in a way that is meaningful, that is secured, and that is authoritative in some way, so that their representatives or someone representing a group can say, I have this group of people who think this way, and they represent, you know, this percent of your support. And this could be within a company, this could be within a cause, this could be within government. And so I've been enamored by sort of the concept of Countability not accountability, although I love the play on accountability, but just the countableness of being able to sort of numerically bring together and evaluate what people think around an issue. And we started with that with bills. We would write summaries of legislation. We would put them up on Countable, and people could vote yay or nay. And you could then see a breakdown by district, how people think in support of or against any law. Very similar to what has to happen in Congress and in the Senate when they vote yay, nay on a bill. We do the same thing on Countable. And then you get a vote result and a vote tally showing you, in my case, Barbara Lee, who represents my district, voted yes or no on this issue. We are aligned or we are not aligned. And that starts to build a real feedback loop where I can start to really see how often I and my lawmaker are in sync or not. It's pretty cool.
With anyone who's built or attempted to build a platform of this sort, one of the maybe the central challenge has been getting enough people on it to have a critical mass where it was interesting to be there. How did you do that? And where are you in terms of in your main platform, not the one that you sell to particular clients? What's the count of Countable?
There are a lot of different counts, unfortunately. It's not kind of one simple number. Countable's total reach on any day is the number of people who are engaging with us on social media, who are engaging with us through our direct properties, who are receiving our emails and opening them, is anywhere from 75,000 to 200,000 people a day. Our monthly audience reach is in the millions when you take all of those pieces together. How many people have signed up for Countable, downloaded Countable, written a letter to their lawmaker? It's a million plus that are in sort of our registered user audience base. But that's not our total reach because there are multiple ways that you can engage with Countable on any day. And then our customers have their reach as well. And in some cases, our customers are promoting Countable content or Countable issues within their audiences. In terms of kind of building that reach and growing that reach, it really does kind of flow with the news cycle, issues of the day, the legislative cycle. We just had H.R. 1 for the People Act that was voted on in Congress and passed, which was a massive bill with, you know, everything from a federal holiday for voting to changes to campaign finance. It was a huge bill. We broke that into a variety of different kind of sub pieces, highlighting it, explaining the different tenets, giving people ways to communicate with their lawmakers about it, and sent tens of thousands of messages to lawmakers about this issue just through the core Countable platform. Alyssa Milano, last fall around the Kavanaugh hearings, used one of our tools to collect stories, incredibly powerful, heartfelt stories about sexual assault. And she took those stories and then she shined a light on them as videos, which were put in public forums in the face of lawmakers in places where Alyssa's followers, Countable's followers could drive up their viewership and audience and in turn really start to kind of feel the impact in a way that a tweet alone is not going to give you. Like really sort of seeing that visceral story of somebody telling their story is incredibly powerful. That campaign went out to millions of people, saw that and engaged with it. So it really depends on the issue. What we have built is in many ways kind of the catch-all for a community to really form and grow. And then kind of echoes of that can go live in social media, on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and emails that go out. And then But ultimately, they should drive people back to a place to take an action, to join the community, to sign up. And that's really what our platform is designed to do. It's meant to be that home for the community.
When you talk about the version that you sell to a group, you mentioned, you know, Aaron Brockovich or Chelsea Handler. I assume you're selling this to them. They sort of customize it for their needs and point it to their audience and try to grow something there. Do any of the communities that have been built by your clients rival the main one in size, or they tend to be smaller? How does that sort out?
We are a slot in for any community or audience. So, I mean, Chelsea has 10 million followers on Twitter. This is where she sends people to do things. Twitter is where she'll post kind of quick updates, but Twitter's not a place to take action. So she'll include the link and say, go here to take action. Aaron will do the same.
When they do that, do those people, do they sign up to this platform and do they return? Or like being a Twitter follower is a pretty low bar. Being a member of someone's community like this, much, much higher.
Right, exactly. I mean, I think that's sort of the crux of what makes this unique and special and critical is that here you have that stickiness. Because the moment you come to a piece of content that Aaron or Chelsea or whomever puts on in their action center, you're in kind of a new world. You're in a place where I can learn, I can be informed. I'm given an opportunity to express my opinion. And when I express my opinion or join, et cetera, I'm effectively one click creating an account. I can now message my lawmaker on this issue or communicate with the broader community or give my input. That's a tremendous way to join a movement that otherwise would have just been a like. And then I start to proactively get updates directly from Chelsea or Aaron or whomever saying, here's the issue of the day. Here's the action you can take. Here's what I'm up to. Here's what you've said you're up to. That's an incredible driver of re-engagement, particularly for folks who are living on their phones and looking for, you know, more and more kind of mobile-friendly ways to engage and interact and take action.
So compare this for me with some other types of platforms that are out there or have been out there. You know, like there was the social networking thing that Barack Obama had, Mibo, or there's something called Liker, or there's like Nation Builder, which is really a campaign software tool, but is used for building a community. And there's lots of others in that category. Why would someone pick yours? And what do you sort of see as competition out there?
The examples that you've raised are fairly distinct kind of platforms. I'll just speak generally to competition. And I think when you're talking about competition now, you're talking about why would a cause or campaign choose us over one of these platforms? And there are several reasons. One is that they want to have Facebook-like capabilities tied to actions that they define for an audience that they control and to be able to reach their audience whenever they want. That doesn't exist really anywhere else. The fact that we are building a platform that is really marrying that content, community, and action together, where I, as a cause, can effectively overnight have a robust take action tab or even a website replacement that is a rich place for my audience to learn about what I do, what I'm doing, my progress, stay informed, get engaged. Right now, to accomplish that, you really have to sort of cobble together a bunch of tools in a bespoke, expensive, custom kind of way. It's massive pain. Now, that's kind of one piece of it. The other piece of it is the data piece, which is a lot of these platforms that exist, Facebook notably, will not let you actually know your audience. And in fact, you can't even reach your audience anymore directly. As you like, we've all played the Facebook game. We've helped build Facebook. We've given Facebook our audiences. We've grown these communities on Facebook. And now we're stuck and we can't reach those communities. The organic reach of any post that you put on Facebook is like 2 to 3% of your total audience of likes, which makes them largely worthless. Furthermore, I can't extract their email address, their location, any way to contact them outside of Facebook. So my only option to reach those audiences through Facebook is to pay to advertise to reach them, which is absurd. And I have to keep paying them. It's the Facebook tax. So we want to get people off of that. We want to get people back to reclaiming their audience in a Facebook-like environment designed to take the actions you want to take to reach your goals and to do it in a way that you're pulling that those audiences into your own CRM, into your own direct access that you have access to. And then we want to do it in a mobile-friendly way. So this is branded as you. It could be your own app experience. You're getting push notifications directly to your key community members and audience. You're in control of reaching them. This is very much kind of an arms race that causes and organizations are having to fight right now, where if I have a list and I have an audience, how do I reach that list and audience? And what we built is a way for them to start to get ahead of, all right, Facebook has locked out my audience. Gmail, by the way, is now pushing your emails into these secondary tabs. So as an organization, it's harder and harder to get people to even see your emails, which is a super pain in the butt. So what does that leave? Well, right now that's leaving browser notifications, push notifications. It's kind of the next frontier of being able to reach your audience. And that's a big, big part of how we help to propel and arm organizations to be able to reach their audience.
So if I'm an organization and I've adopted your platform and I have a list of 100,000 people, do I reach them like I would with a blast email tool? Can I text them? Can I have each person on my list have a preferred way of receiving information? How does the communication go from you, the organization, to your community?
I presume you're talking about sort of the customer experience, right?
Right. Or sort of the tool experience for, let's say you have a digital director for your nonprofit and they want to use this versus use what you've suggested are sometimes cobbling together other applications or sometimes using a different platform that's broad-based, right?
The general best practice, which kind of shrinks and grows depending on sort of the capabilities of the organization, is to build out effectively sort of a content calendar and really to be thoughtful about what your goals are for your content and community engagement. Be realistic about the size of your organization and your ability to create content. You can always lean on Countable's editorial team to supplement your content. So pulling in news, legislation, updates, analysis, that's part of our value is that we'll help to kind of fill in the gaps in your content calendar. We recommend a fairly frequent touch to your audience.
But that touch, that content calendar, how does that get sent?
Let's say that you know that your objective is to, we'll stick with global warming, is to have kind of a key news story or analysis piece going up every week. And you've identified what the piece is going to be. You're talking about climate restoration. You've got a piece written. And then in conjunction with that piece, you want to also create the micro content versions of that piece. So let's say it's an article. You also want to create kind of a visual version, animated version. You want to create some stills, quotes, et cetera, for Instagram, for Facebook, for all the key channels you want to be using. And then you also have an email list. In our case, our platform will automatically be sending emails out and push notifications out and browser notifications out to your subscribed audience who has already approved receiving that correspondence. But you may have secondary lists for other communities as well. You publish the piece of content. You initiate the automated sending of those pieces through the push notifications, email, browser notifications, all go out through the platform. You then also do your social media posts. Let's say you're using Buffer or something like that to do your posts. All of that is creating sort of a downward stream of traffic, engagement, audience to that piece of content that lives within your action center or your white labeled action center, which is how we refer to these entities, which could be your website. Then you have a secondary round that starts to happen where you're starting to get people to engage with that piece. They're writing comments, they're taking actions, they're recording videos. And then you have the opportunity to do a secondary post, which is the audience contributions, the UGC that you think is really wonderful sort of expressions of this campaign or issue. Those then also go back out on social media. Those then also go back out potentially in a highlight of how this piece is doing or what you're saying. So you're getting these echoes or sort of the ripples in this stream of content contribution by just having user participation, which is super cool. And so that one piece of content becomes a great driver of awareness and engagement and action and signups and sharing, and then secondary actions and sharing and signups that happen ongoing. A small team can actually do a tremendous amount with one piece of content. And then you start to marry in some of our content or secondary content, you know, an update from the field, if you will, and you start to have a very real, robust feeling community in support of your cause or campaign.
So what's an ideal client for you?
So we really cut our teeth around nonprofit advocacy. That's really where we began. We started by building kind of advocacy tools first, and then really saw that the pain was much greater than just an advocacy tool. The pain in the field was our audience is fragmented. We have a hard time reaching them. They're kind of locked away in these environments like Facebook and others. How do we cost effectively reach and engage our audience? And so that was sort of how we came about. And so GLAAD is a great customer. Environmental Defense Fund is a great customer. We've been just blown away by what Aaron and Alyssa and Chelsea have been able to do as examples. That kind of action community, that's our bread and butter. Our plans are to take that core capability and bring it more into the media world and really showcase to media the potential of a platform like this. I mean, we would love to work with somebody like Crooked and give them Pod Save America and give them a platform so that when they're talking about a story on the podcast, there is an immediate action and series of actions that their community can take in conjunction with it. That would be huge. We would love to do that.
What about a much smaller podcast?
How about a much smaller podcast? We would love to work with you and give you those capabilities and community as well. Absolutely. We would love to work with candidates who want to start a conversation ahead of 2020 around what their priorities should be and start to really directly engage their potential constituents in a way that really sort of lays the groundwork for a new kind of representative democracy, where it's not just that I'm going to tell you what I think. I also want to hear from you, and I want to have a conversation that is countable, where we can really engage around the issues that we need to solve. We would love to work with companies like Patagonia, who are really trying to make change and impact and trying to be great corporate citizens and give them a way to bring their community together and really make them feel like they're part of a community, have a voice, and have their voices heard.
How does your platform, when used by a customer, play with other tools that they may have? So like someone like Environmental Defense Fund is very likely going to have a CRM, is very likely to have lots of other survey tool or other pieces of their puzzle. Do you have APIs? How does it coexist with other apps?
We do have APIs. We have an existing integration with Nation Builder. We're just about to start talks with NGP, whom I believe you have some familiarity. We do have existing APIs that are relatively easy to synchronize your sort of audience data into your CRM. And then we've got batch download capabilities, things of that nature as well. We are fairly agnostic with regards to who you are working with and really are eager to work with lots of partners around the data sync side of this. There's been a tremendous amount of innovation on the back office side of kind of movement building, but on the front side, the customer facing side, and that's really where we're trying to make our dent, is in trying to create a singular unified view into audiences, be it on your phone, on the web, through widgets, you name it, so that it feels like it's all a one view into you.
Anyone building a platform in politics has to at some point draw a line about who they will not sell their platform to. How do you draw that line?
We really built Countable around a couple of sort of core beliefs. We felt that really the divide that needed to be bridged was increasingly between the average American and Washington. And when we started Countable, it was actually a very different political world. It was 2013 when we sort of hatched the idea. It was 2014 when we first launched. And Obama was president. There was tremendous gridlock. Very little was getting done. From that point forward, our belief was very much that kind of both sides needed to be able to have a platform and a place to talk to one another. And that's very much what you'll see on Countable today. You'll see views from kind of all across the political spectrum, not just two particular views, but many. And that's been really sort of a guiding principle for us. We believe, and certainly if you look at sort of the history of America, that the shifts and changes and evolutions of what one party stands for and what different people within a party stand for really are quite fundamental. So that's part of our DNA. In answer to the question which I think you're asking, which is what's the litmus test that we put on clients who we'll work with, in general, we really try to hone to the values and principles that are enshrined in the documents underpinning America and standing by the institutions and defending the institutions that we believe are necessary and important for the positive establishment and work of democracy. So we believe in and want to support the institutions behind America, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, the freedoms that are protected within.
To make that more concrete, though, Like, what do you do if the Trump campaign wants to use your platform, or Mitch McConnell wants to use your platform, or the NRA wants to use your platform?
We're not working with any of the folks that you have just named currently, and we will evaluate any client based on the criteria that I just outlined and on what they stand for and so forth. It's very much on a case-by-case basis, but as I said, we're not working with any of them currently.
Have you said no to anybody?
We have said no to some people, yes.
What was wrong with them?
They didn't pass the test that I have described, particularly around hate speech, around defending principles, which we believe are in violation of the rights and freedoms that America should stand for.
Okay, so I hear that as sort of open bipartisan software or multi-partisan software platform that anybody could use except for some real fringe operators.
Absolutely. And anyone can come in today and use Countable. We don't proactively censor the use of Countable.
And any user on your main like citizen platform could espouse any views. Do you do anything to incorporate civility into the platform to keep it from degenerating as so many do?
That has been one of our kind of core concerns from the beginning, and a critical concern when you're trying to build a platform that is literally about showcasing differing opinions. We have tried to build civility into really all aspects of how we manage the platform and how you as a user engage the platform, starting with a code of conduct for community and principles and guidelines that we espouse, which civility is one of the top tenets of. And then the way that the software is built as well. So within the Countable environment, we have intentionally taken away opportunities for basically two people to butt horns, if you will. Anyone can present their perspective, share their opinion, take an action, but you cannot do it in opposition to anyone else. You can't go in and say, that person's wrong, I'm right. The way that we've done that is that we've kept away from letting people reply to one another directly.
Isn't that like any comment thread on a newspaper article where you see people one after another rendering their opinions and sometimes attacking someone four lines up?
We're going to get into the weeds here, but I'll try to quickly address this. There are a bunch of things that we've done intentionally, not just one. Your contributions to be public, you have to achieve kind of certain milestones within the system. You can like another person's posts. You cannot dislike them. You can't downvote. So it's all based on kind of positive support for perspectives. Unlike a lot of those other systems that you've mentioned, you cannot reply to, there's no thread to the comment or the argument that somebody is making. Finally, within the argument that people are making, you can see their perspectives. You can see basically this person voted yes, or I support, or I agree with, versus somebody else who voted no. And that's a very important distinction because it allows for us to programmatically present multiple perspectives on an issue based on how people have voted and then the comments that they've made. Is it perfect? No. We're frequently working on improvements to make Countable more civil, to maintain that civility. But those features and functionality we've heard again and again from our community is something that they really appreciate, and something that they appreciate that they can have their voice heard, they can express their opinion, and not necessarily have to be open to criticism from others. Yeah, somebody down the thread could say, hey, so-and-so, I disagree with you, but it's not locked into a thread. It's not based on kind of recency. Net-net, the platform tools and approaches that we've taken have really been based on having looked at what has not worked in so many other environments, in Reddit, in YouTube, in the New York Times comment section, to really try to build an experience where someone who is new, comes in, can have a positive experience, feel like they're participating in democracy, expressing their opinion, and doing so around their perspective, among many perspectives, and honoring that sort of legacy.
You mentioned earlier having something like 75,000 people a day on the main platform, and that's a huge number of people. especially if you compare it to how many people listen to my podcast, for example. It's also a vanishingly small number when you compare it to how many people are sharing news articles on Facebook or Instagram or something. Where do you want to be?
So, you know, very much for us, our success is not so much tied to how big is the Countable brand. I think, as I mentioned earlier, the Countable brand is, that's our kind of editorial, political test bed, Skunkworks, where we're really trying to showcase how editorial can shift and how news can shift and bring user and audience engagement together with it. A lot of our success really hinges on how others are using their version of the platform. So when one of our customers, call it the Environmental Defense Fund, is using Countable to engage their audience, to be able to keep their audience informed on environmental issues, and then give them ways to take regular action and to really build a community of impact, that's where we're really starting to see our mission really come together and audiences and communities moving beyond just a petition or just a like into a movement, you know, an active movement. And that those kind of underlying pieces all have to come together to make that happen. If in the process we see Countable really turn into kind of one of our pipe dreams, is that Countable becomes sort of a political network, a news, politics, information access network, where also our customers can reach people of like mind, convince people as well. That would be extraordinary. I'm thrilled that we get the usage that we do and that people, I think, come in the way that they do to the Countable brand today. I think it's a specific kind of use case for people who are coming in, because this is very much, you know, sort of getting into the muck of Washington and what your lawmakers are doing. That's not sharing a cat video. That's not sharing a viral meme. That's not something that I'm going to share out to my social media and everybody's going to laugh at and say, haha, that's funny, I agree with you. These are real substantive issues. They take work. They take thought. They take commitment and dedication to dig into, and particularly when you're going to do it in an environment among other people who are maybe not of the same mind as you, and you're going to enter into a debate with them. I mean, that's, I think, the magic of what we've built, and the fact that we have so many people using it in this way now, which is amazing. But, you know, realistically, it's never going to become a Facebook. You know, people go to Facebook for entertainment. They go to Facebook to escape. This is not entertainment. This is governing. Ultimately, if we can start to bring sort of nexus communities with like a bridge to your lawmakers, to government, to Washington, to your local legislative and governmental communities, almost like liquid democracy, like the idea that there are movements like the Environmental Defense Fund or leaders who emerge, who understand issues like global warming and can help to quickly educate you so that you feel like you have the information you need to be able to take action. That's, I think, where this all needs to go. We need to have lots of these kind of sub-communities where there are leaders, and they aren't necessarily your elected leaders, but they're leaders in your community or leaders around issues, and you have a relationship with them, you trust them, and that in turn guides your voice, your vote, etc. You know, there's 300 million people in this country. And the issues are complicated. We definitely need those intermediary layers, and we're missing them. We don't have infrastructure for that yet. And that's fundamentally what we're trying to build.
And how's Countable doing as a business then?
We made a significant shift in moving to becoming a platform, to powering a platform. We have gotten a lot of exciting interest in our platform from folks. In the idea of being able to have a mobile app, and the idea of being able to use content as a bridge to action engagement, the idea to be able to take your community and move them up kind of your engagement ladder. And what we've found at the same time is that there's also pushback. And the pushback has been, we don't want another platform like where we don't have control. We don't want to put our audience on another Facebook or on another Instagram or on another Twitter. We want to have that control ourselves, and we want to have that audience ourselves. And so, you know, sort of this pivot we made a year ago was to say, all right, well, why don't we turn Countable into that kind of platform where it can be your community under your brand, under your movement, and you're in control and you're able to directly access your audience through that control. And the response to that has been universally supportive. It just resonates on so many levels with large organizations, small organizations, the social impact groups within companies, political campaigns. We're getting interest in this, even from media. The response has been very exciting, very favorable. It is also something of an education. What we're doing is pretty novel and innovative, and there aren't that many other sort of solutions out there like what we've built. So we are spending a fair amount of time educating the market, explaining them what this can do. And by and large, it's just been a really fantastic response. So we're thrilled.
So what generally have you learned about entrepreneurship specifically in the political space?
This has been an incredible journey for sure. There's this term of sort of fail fast in startups. And we never quite failed, but we also never sort of achieved blockbuster sort of success. But we always had, we just kept kind of ratcheting it up and having a little bit more success and a little bit more success. And it's been a just an incredible journey. But I have, you know, the lessons that I would share for somebody who's going into this, the most significant one, I think, is that you need to have a business model that you can generate some kind of revenue very early. Any hopes, as I had, of kind of an early stage venture capital support style business in this space were unfounded, very, very difficult. Just the nature of the beast is such that this is a foreign world for a lot of investors. It also is not a world with a lot of successes. And most investors like to be able to look at a model and say, aha, you are like that model and there have been successes like that model. And, you know, you are the Lyft to, you know, the Uber that has already come along and we see how that's going to work and scale and it's going to be glorious. You have to be able to answer those questions, I think, at least from an economic standpoint. On the flip side, the wonder, the power of the mission, particularly now, working in politics in America in 2019 is extraordinary. And again, I started this thing in 2014. And when you look at the journey over time and just the amount of energy now and the number of people who care and are following politics and following news and contacting their representatives and getting angry. And I'm sure you remember this as well. I mean, when we think back to when Obama was president, he was not able to command headlines every 5 minutes. He, you know, his tweets were not being quoted on the news every night. Like it is a staggeringly different world that we are in now. And it's a world that I think fundamentally needs way more experiments like Countable. There are many very well-meaning entrepreneurs, technologists, advocates out there starting, experimenting, trying, and building great data-driven solutions and doing so for modest budgets, but fundamentally they need more support. There does need to be more economic support to bridge this world of sort of the accelerator. There have been a number of kind of early stage civic oriented accelerators, Higher Ground Labs, Harmony. There's a number of these out there. And then there are also a bunch of like double bottom line private equity funds and so forth. But the VC world in there, particularly around sort of politics and civic, there just aren't that many. And that's a real significant issue when you look at the challenges we have.
Aside from the funding side, are there other things that you think make politics different as a place to run an enterprise?
I think you've nailed one of the other major ones in this conversation, which is what lane are you in? Are you going about it from a partisan perspective or a nonpartisan perspective? And then if you pick a lane and let's say you started on a partisan side and then midway through, you're like, oh no, we need to be bipartisan now. Can you make that shift? And what today is your stance on that vis-a-vis Trump? And that question, which can very much be a question that can kind of tar you from one side or the other.
I've seen people start bipartisan and move to partisan. I've seen people start partisan and move to bipartisan. And I've seen people stay in a lane. And I think there's virtues to each of those models from a business standpoint. The more that you become a strategic asset and the less you are sort of a generic platform, the more pressure there typically is for you to pick a side. Is there one question I should have asked that I failed to?
The one thing that I would emphasize is that there has been a democratization and an openness of platforms that has really brought, I think, the cost down to starting a movement, starting a nonprofit, starting a collective. Now, on Countable right now, anyone can come in and create their own free action center, which gives them the ability to collect their own community, to keep their own community informed, and give their community a myriad of ways to act and engage, including advocacy, petitions, polling, reactions, etc. And when you really look at the work that particularly many kind of nonprofits and advocacy organizations are doing, what we've built is a lot of kind of the core elements to beginning to build your list and your audience and bring them together. And to be able to do that for free or nearly free, I think is a game changer. And our platform isn't the only one. You want to start a political movement, you can use Nation Builder. I mean, there's a myriad of tools out there that have really brought the cost down to start your movement. So much of politics is local. And the need for more local-oriented tools to be able to impact our communities, clean up our streets, take care of our schools and our kids, like the power of platforms to help to enable that. And I'm very much hopeful that, you know, that Countable can serve in that mission as well.
Well, it's a great pleasure to hear about this today. And I thank you for taking the time. Anything else you want to say?
Thank you very much. And thank you for all your work. And this is really a tremendous opportunity. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to your audience and to you.
That was Bart Myers and Countable. Bart is at countable.us. I'm interested to follow the trajectory of Countable and to learn more about the value of their action hub. This is Nathaniel G. Perlman with the Great Battlefield Podcast. You can find us at resistancedashboard.com or by searching for Great Battlefield in places where podcasts are found.